by which the sunlight on the ground is split. Don't marvel, but believe that he can't be without the aid of heaven's power to pit himself against the wall he comes to climb." Thus Virgil, and a spokesman for that group of worthies, said, "For just a little time turn back, and then go on before our troop." The hand, reversed, at this point made a sign. "Whoever you might be, turn as you go your face, and think if ever you saw mine out there." I turned to him. I tried to know. I looked. He was fine-featured and fair-haired, a noble presence, but a blow had cut one of his eyebrows through. When I had spared no humble words to tactfully rebut any suggestion I had known him, "Look," he said, and bared high on his breast a gaping wound. "Behold my open book! Yes, I am Manfred, torn up from my rest and thrown out of the church's lands, grandson to Empress Constance. Thus I beg of you, visit my lovely daughter when you've done your time here and go back. Mother of two kingdoms, of Sicily and Aragon, if she has heard another tale, she ought to hear the truth. When life could not go on, my body cleft by two strokes, I then thought to yield myself to him who freely gives his pardon. Yes, my sins were horrible. But the healing goodness that forever lives has arms so wide they take in all who will turn to it. If Cosenza's bishop, sent by Clement to hunt me, had rightly read that page of God that says, 'He whose intent is to approach me shall be housed and fed and not cast out,' then still my body's bones would now at Benevento's bridgehead lie under the shelter of those heavy stones stacked in a cairn. They would be warm and dry. But now the wind is at them, and the rain soaks them beyond the kingdom by the stream that marks the border. Bones brought in disdain, with tapers quenched. But though the pastors deem a man heretical, he can't be lost to that point where eternal love can't save his soul, if hope keeps love free from the frost and evergreen. It's true that if the grave opens for one denied the sacraments by Holy Church, he must stand on the sill, no matter how intensely he repents. For 30 times the time he set his will presumptuously high, if holy prayers don't shrink his sentence. So now, if you can, bring gladness to me in my present cares, by telling the good Constance of the man whose soul you saw here, sadly made to wait, for prayer from elsewhere can unlatch the gate." Canto 4. Let pain or pleasure touch a faculty of ours, and soon our soul will concentrate entirely on that. It seems to be alert to that one power. All others wait. And this exclusiveness is contrary to any notion that one soul has been brought high above our several souls, for such was Plato's error. That's a thing we've seen or heard can occupy the soul so much, time passes and one doesn't know it. For the faculty attuned to it is one, and that which holds the whole soul is one more, the first one bound, the second free to run. Of this I had experience. This soul, Manfred, I'd heard and marveled at, and while I'd been absorbed, the sun had climbed a whole 50 degrees, and in my usual style I hadn't seen it do so. Then we came to where the spirits all together cried, "Here's what you want!" An opening the same in shape, but many times as wide. The peasant fills with forkfuls of thick thorn to keep thieves from the grapes when they grow dark. Our own gap in a hedge we now found torn before us in the rock. That was our mark. Now that the group had left us. You can go up to San Leo, or down all the way to Noli, or climb where the rock is so steep at Bismantova, the locals say the town's a summit, and all that on foot. But here, you had to fly. With the quick wings, I mean, of great desire, with plumage put to the high task of following what brings us hope, the guidance that for me made light. we climbed inside the rock. The surface on each side pressed close to us. The walls were tight. The floor was rough, for hands and feet. Upon all fours, almost, we reached the upper edge of the high bank on the open hillside. "So, master," I said, "which way?" There on the ledge, he said, "Not one step back. The way to go is up, and close behind me, till some wise guide comes for us." The summit was so high, it went beyond the limits of my eyes. The slope went up more steeply through the sky than a right angle bisected. I was spent when I spoke thus, "Sweet father, look back here. Unless you stop, I'm left alone." He bent back down and said, "My son, a place is near where you may rest a while. Just drag yourself as far as there." He pointed to the rim above of what soon proved to be a shelf that ran around the hill. Inspired by him, I forced myself to clamber the last few hard yards behind him till the ground turned flat. We sat there facing east, from which we too had come, as revelation does, so that was probably a help. The shore below was where I bent my eyes first. Then I raised them to the sun and marveled we were so struck by it from the north. It should have blazed in summer south. The poet noted well how stunned I was the chariot of light went by in the wrong place. "If it befell," he said, "that parties to this brilliant sight, along with the sun's mirror, were the twins Castor and Pollux, then that growing wheel, the zodiac, whose timeless flight begins and ends in north and south, you'd see now steal still closer to the bears, unless it quit its usual path. If you would ponder how this thing might be, put all your mind to it. Picture Jerusalem and this hill. Now think of them placed on earth so that they share just one horizon, but their hemispheres are each their own. Then in the air you'll see how Phaethon's highway here appears, the road he failed on and so sealed his fate, on this side of the mountain, and Zion on that. Just think about it. Concentrate." "Truly," I said, "master, my doubts are gone. I can see clearly now, as never yet, for lack of wit, that the mid-circle of celestial motion, which is always set between the sun and winter up above, the equator, to use the special name one science gives it, lies, as you said, why as north from here as Hebrews saw the same straight line move south towards a different day, on hotter land. But if it pleases you, I'd like to know how far we have to go. This mountain needs more than my eyes can do to reach its peak." And he, "The start below on this hill's always hard, but as you climb higher it takes less effort. Therefore, when it seems so pleasant in the course of time that going up is far less taxing, then, when the ascent is like a drift downstream by boat, then you will find the high trail's end. There you must rest your weariness. I deem this to be truth. This answer I defend and say no more." As soon as he had said these words, a voice nearby, "Perhaps before you get that far you'll need a seat." Eyes led by that sound, we both turned, and there we saw a great stone we had neither of us seen till then. We went there. There were people there in the shade, resting, as men whose rest has been sought out through indolence. One with an air of weariness, his arms around his knees, sat with his face between them. "My dear lord," I said, "behold, for here are mysteries. The laziness of this one could afford comparison with sloth, as if she were his energetic sister." The soul turned, slowly took note of us, and deigned to stir his face above his thigh, so I discerned an inch of space between them. "You're so strong," he said. "Go up." I knew who it must be, and my fatigued breath, still short from the long ascent, only for moments hindered me from going to him. He scarce raised his head when I reached him. "Have you made out the way the chariot is driven?" the soul said. by the sun past your left shoulder? His display of lazy movement and his few words moved my lips to smile a little. I began, Bell'acqua, since your future is approved, I do not grieve for you. But if you can summon the urge, pray tell me why you sit just here. Is there an escort you await? Or are you back to form? Can that be it? Slow off the mark, and always running late? And he, My brother, tell me, what's the use of going up? God's angel at the gate would never let me through on an excuse to meet the torments. First the heavens must revolve around me, while I wait outside, as long as when I lived, and it is just. Because I was so late I rightly sighed, unless a helpful prayer should first arise from some indulgent heart that lives in grace. A sinner's pleading scarcely signifies in heaven. Now the poet took his place before me, saying, Come on, use your eyes. The sun strikes the meridian, and night treads on Morocco's shore and its last light. Canto 5. I had already parted from those shades and followed in my leader's steps, when one behind me cried, But look how the light fades! He pointed at my walking shadow. None of all the rays shine to his left below. He seems to bear himself like one alive. I turned to see who should be speaking so, and saw them watching, buzzing like a hive, amazed at me and at my broken light. Why, said my guide, so tangled in the mind? How can you be concerned by what they might be murmuring there? Stay with me close behind, and let them talk. Stand like a tower, staunch, unshaken at its top by gusts of wind, for always when a man has thoughts that launch themselves from one the next, his mark is pinned further away, as one thought drains the force out of the other. So what could I say except, I come. I said it with remorse, and felt my face gain color in a way that sometimes makes a man fit to receive a pardon. Meanwhile people walked across the slope ahead and sang as if to grieve the miserere line by line. But loss was not their fate, for mercy, I believe, was theirs already, although in the psalm they went on pleading for it. When they saw the way I blocked the sun, they changed their calm cantata to an oh, long-drawn and raw. And one of them, the messenger, ran out to meet us, asking, What should you disclose? My guide. You can go back and be about your business straight away of telling those who sent you that this man is made of flesh, and if his shadow stopped them, that should be sufficient answer. They need none afresh. Just do him honor and collect the fee. I never saw at nightfall the clear sky, cloven by kindled vapor in a streak of light, nor ever saw the lightning fly through sunset clouds in August. Here I speak of things on earth, to match for sudden speed the way those two returned above, and when they reached the rest they turned thus to proceed with them towards us, as a troop of men turned into horses given rein might run. These souls are many, and they come to press petitions on us, said the poet. None should stop you. Move on. Make your pace no less, and listen as you go. O soul that goes with, for your bliss, the selfsame limbs that you were born with, they cried as they came. Suppose you slowed your steps a little. If you knew any of us before, look hard, you could take news of us back yonder. Why go on? Why don't you stop? Hear what we say. You should, for all of us by violence died, far gone in sin until the last hour when the blaze of heaven's light brought understanding. We, repenting and forgiving, from life's ways emerged into God's peace. The urge to see our benefactor fills our yearning heart. And I search your faces thoroughly, but don't see one I know. All that apart, if there is anything, souls born for bliss, that I can do to please you, by the peace which I go seeking from that world to this, with such a guide to follow, I'll not cease striving to get it done. And one began, In your good offices it needs no oath, if there be power enough for the will's plan. Therefore, before the rest, I'm nothing loath to speak. If ever you should see the land lying between Romagna and that held by Charles, by which I mean, you understand, all Naples, then I pray you be impelled by courtesy to beg them in Fano good prayers be made for me, so that I may purge my grave sins, for I am Jacopo, who came from there. But I was far away, near Padua, when all my deep wounds poured my life's blood, and the son of Antenor, heirs to the Trojan traitor, could afford no safety to me. He of Este bore the burden of the crime, if not the sword. He hated me beyond the bounds of law, yet if towards La Mira I had turned my flight, after his horsemen tracked me down at Oracchio, then I might have spurned my fate, and taken refuge in that town, and still be up there breathing. But I ran into the marsh. Trapped by the reeds and mud, I fell full length, the measure of a man, and saw the spreading pool of my own blood. Another spoke. As I pray your desire be satisfied, that draws you to the high and fruitful hill, just so may I require your gracious pity's helping hand. For I was born in Montefeltro, Guido's son, Buonconte. Not my wife Giovanna, no, nor anybody else, not even one, has care for me, and so alone I go, even among all these with downcast brow. And I to him. What force, what chance, took you so far from Campaldino, no one now knows where your body's buried. It was true we beat your Ghibellines, but you somehow were not among the dead. And he, a creek below the Casentino's foot they call the Archiano. It comes down from the peak above the hermitage. For all its fall the Apennines surround it, to the place where that small stream gives up its early name, with wounded throat and flying foot, a trace of dark blood all across the plain I came. Then I lost sight and speech. I had the grace to end by naming Mary as I fell, and just my flesh remained. But now I would say what is true. Make it the truth you tell among the living. God in his great good sent down his angel, and the one from hell cried, "You from heaven, why do you rob me? You take from me this man's eternal part for just one little tear. It's larceny. But with his mortal flesh I'll make a start on dealing in another way. You know how humid vapor gathering in the air returns as rainfall when its upward flow climbs to the colder realm which holds it there until it liquefies, then lets it go. The prince of ill will has a mind to care only for evil, and he moves the cloud and wind by his peculiar natural force. So Campaldino's valley, where a shroud of mist when that sad day had run its course, covered the mountains rising from the plain, from Pratomango to the peaks. The sky turned dense, the saturated air made rain, more water than the earth could nullify, flooded the ditches and the rivulets collected in the streams that fed the great river that finds the sea. No one forgets the Arno rules us in a princely state, even when it's at peace. But now its source, the Archiano, rampaged at such a pace, nothing before it could resist its force. The torrent found my frozen corpse. Its face swallowed me up and swept me on, until the Arno took apart upon my breast the cross I made when pain had worked its will and overwhelmed me. All along its banks and bed the river rolled me. Then it decked me with its spoils, and so I owe it thanks for giving me a grave none can detect. The third soul spoke. When you return into the world, and rest has eased the price you paid for this long road, think how I said to you, Siena made me. What Siena made was broken by Maremma. And think who said this. I am La Pia, murdered on the orders of my husband, locked away and dealt with so that he might, with me gone, marry again. He's still up there today. He knows about it. He who with his jewel pledged love and faith and wed me, and was cruel. Canto 6. The game of chance breaks up. The loser stays behind and grieves. He thinks about his throws over and over. In his mind, he plays again sad lesson learned. The winner goes, and all the rest go with him, one in front. Another grabs him from behind. One more is by his side, a lapdog at the hunt, whining, "Remember me?" He can't ignore them all. But he does not stop moving while he listens first to this one and then that, and gives each one his hand and a small smile, so they will fall back satisfied, and at the right point he is set free from the throng. He saves himself. So in that crowd was I. I turned my face to them, first here, then there, and by my promises got free. To die by violence had been the fate to share between these. I could see the Aretine, a judge that fierce Gino di Tacco killed in open court. The next had fled the scene from Campaldino, and his lungs had filled with water. And there begged with outstretched hands Federico, a novello, beaten dead in battle. That slain youth from Pisan lands, whose father, good Marzucco, was instead of plotting his revenge, moved to forgive the murderers. Count Orso I saw, too, whose cousin worked it so he should not live, and that soul severed, if the tale is true, by spite and envy from its body, not by that crime he was hanged for. Yes, Pierre de la Brosse. May she not say she forgot that story when she's here and find it fair, the Lady of Brabant, that no worse lot than being sent to this flock is her fate. As soon as I was free of them, whose one and only prayer, while they were forced to wait, was for the prayers of others, thus to run sooner to holiness, I said, "To me, it seems, my light, you took pains to deny, through Palinurus, a divine decree is ever bent by prayer. And that was why he never reached the kingdom of the dead. Yet these here pray for prayer alone. Will they, too, pray in vain? Or are those words you said something I didn't take in the right way?" "My writing's plain," he told me, "and the hope of these souls is well founded. You just think, with sound mind now, as we ascend. The slope ends at the height of justice. Will it sink simply because the fire of love supplies in one quick flash what each soul here is owed in satisfaction? What I wrote implies a prayer was bound to fail that had no road to God. But such a question is too deep for you to take a stand on, without first hearing from her who in the full great sweep of light from mind to faith is so well versed. I speak of Beatrice. Did I puzzle you? Above us, on the mountain's lofty peak, her smile and ecstasy will fill your view. My lord," I said as soon as I could speak, "can we go faster? I'm less weary now, and see the mountain casts a shadow." "We'll go on with this day's march," he said, "as much as liked permits. And yet be sure what's real is far from what you think. Before you touch the peak above, you'll see that one return who now lies hidden in behind the hill, so you don't break his beam. But look and learn. See there a soul who sits alone, and will, he looks towards us, point the quickest route." We came to him. "Ah, Lombard shade, how high and mighty was your poise, how absolute the dignity behind the steely eye of your regard." He said no word to us. He would have let us pass. He only gazed, a crouching lion. Nothing to discuss. But Virgil went right up to him and raised the question of the best ascent. He gave no answer, but inquired of our birthplace and our condition. "Mantua," my grave but gentle guide began. The shade, a case till then of total self-involvement, leapt towards him, saying, "Mantua, behold, Sordello of your city!" And each swept the other close as eager arms could fold. "Slave Italy! Hostel of grief! Lost ship, without a pilot in a storm! No more princess of peoples, but a swarming tip, a brothel! Think of what you were before and could have been again! This noble soul was so keen just for his dear city's name, to greet its citizen, and now your whole country is never free from sword and flame, and all the living are shut in with wall and moat, and each enclosure does the same, chews at the others. Wretched one, search all your seashores, then look deep within your breast, and see if any part rejoice in peace. What boots it that Justinian gave you the reins of law to guide your choice? The saddle's empty, the horse riderless, left to itself. If there had never been a law, there had been less shame to confess. But you know what restraint was meant to mean, so your excess is strictly recklessness. Your clergy, who were pledged to be devout, and should, if you paid God's instructions heed, let Caesar ride the horse, the truth is out. From lack of guidance by his spurs, the steed turned vicious for its bridle in your hand can only lead astray. Ah, Emperor, Albert of Saxony, who saw our land not even once, and who abandoned her to be what she's become, savage and wild. You that should now bestry her saddle-bow, let starry judgment fall on man and child. Let your successor fear forthcoming woe. You and your father Rudolph, both held back by greed, have let your empire's garden go to pieces, desolation, ruin, rack. Come see the Montagues and Capulets, Monaldi, Filippeschi families ranged against each other, those that grace forgets, wretched in dread, because you were estranged, having no care. Come, cruel one, come and see your nobles in distress and soothe their pain. You'll see the level of security in Santa Fiora, where Siena's gain means loss of land for all those Ghibellines. Come see your Rome, that widowed and alone weeps night and day. Caesar, my lord! It keens, why aren't you here with me? Come see your own, your people, how they love each other. Or, if our plight fails to move your pity, come for shame of your repute. If it be law for me, Supreme Jehovah, you, the sum of all good, who were crucified on earth for us, to question you, are your just eyes turned elsewhere? Or do you arrange the birth in the chasm of your counsel for some guise of good we are unable to perceive? For all our cities here in Italy are full of tyrants. Even clowns believe that playing partisan means they must be Marcellus, dreaming he made Caesar grieve by talk against the empire. You may well, my Florence, take your ease at this digression, which has little truth to tell about you. For your people never miss a trick in their resource. Others, at heart, have justice. But that arrow leaves the bow too slowly, for the thought must play its part of what the heart means. But your people know law only at the tongue's tip. Others avoid the weight of office, but your people cry, unasked, their eagerness to be employed. I'll bear the burden. A good reason why you should be happy, for your cause is good. So rich and so at peace, and oh, so wise. I speak a truth borne out by facts. Nor could Athens and Sparta, chosen to devise the ancient laws and thus be civil, give one hint beside you of the proper way, my Florence, that a city ought to live. You make provisions so fine every day. The threads you spin in one month do not last to the middle of the next. Can you recall how often you've changed in your checkered past, your laws, your money, offices, and all your customs, and thrown out your active men or brought them back according to which crew is in control of cleaning up the den? And if you see yourself unblinking, you see a sick woman who turns seeking rest on a bed of down, but is no less distressed.
Canto 7.
After these greetings, proud yet high of heart, had been repeated 3 times and once more, Sordello drew back. When they stood apart, he said, "But who are you?" Virgil, "Before souls worthy of the climb to God came here to this hill, my dead bones were buried by Augustus. I am Virgil. For that mere defect, lack of the faith that I could not have had, because a child was not yet born, I lost heaven." So spoke Virgil of his lot. As one who marvels at the sudden dawn before him of a thing he both believes and disbelieves, and says, "It is, and yet it isn't," and then finally retrieves his power to move, Sordello, with bent head, again went humbly to my lord, embraced him low down as the lowly do, and said, "O glory of the Latins, you that graced our tongue and proved its power to the earth, what deed of mine or blessing shows me you? Honor eternal for my place of birth. If I deserve your words, tell me what's true. You came from hell? Which cloister?" Virgil then, "Through all that kingdom's circles of regret, I have come. But it was only when the power of heaven helped that I could set my aim this high. It's not that I did wrong, but I did nothing, and so lost the sight of that high holy sun for which you long, and I knew of too late. Out of the light below, there is a place where sadness lies in darkness, not in torment, where laments are never cries of pain, but only sighs. There I abide with little innocence, seized by death's fangs before they reach the prize of baptism, and so they were not free of human guilt. And also I abide with all those souls who aren't clad by the 3 virtues called holy, but set sin aside through following the other 4. Yet we would hear from you, if you know and may say, directions by which we might quickly climb to where purgatory begins. Which way?" Sordello said, "But now you're pressed for time. For us here no unchanging place is set. I may go up and round. I'll go as far with you as I'm allowed, but not quite yet. See how the day declines. From where you are, to go by night up higher can't be done. It's time to find a refuge. See these shades here on the right, apart from everyone? If you consent before the last light fades, I'll bring you to them. They'll be overjoyed to meet you." Virgil answered, "How is that? Does that mean someone who climbed in the void of night would miss what he was aiming at because of some external force, or would he just lack strength? You should not cross this line after the sun is gone." So said the good Sordello, and with his finger made the sign there on the ground. "Though it be understood, there's nothing else to hinder your ascent except the dark that tangles up your will with helplessness. You even might have meant to go back down, yet wander round the hill, for all the time the sun is locked out by the dark horizon." And my lord, as though in thought, said, "Lead us there, where we may lie at ease as you have said." And it was so. We'd gone a little way, when I saw how the mountain's face was scooped out, just as though a valley pierced a mountain here and now. "We'll go there," said the shade, "where that slope makes a shelter, and await the sun's return." A level, winding path with sudden breaks of steepness brought us where, we would soon learn, the dell's wall at half-height looked down upon a garden. Gold, fine silver, cochineal, white lead, and indigo spread so it shone both bright and clear, and emerald with the seal of its hard skin spilt, all these were outsoared in color by the grass and flowers there foregathered on the valley floor, greensward ablaze with pigments. Nor did the soft air fall short of this parade of nature's tints. 1,000 perfumes, each sweet on its own, made one, a blend that I have not known since, nor to men living was it ever known. From where I was, I saw, on that bright green among the flowers, spirits that sang the last hymn of the day, by which, of course, I mean Salve Regina. Beyond the valley's rim, they were unseen. "Soon now the sun will sink and find its nest," the Mantuan began who had directed us. Yet do not think before it does to ask me if I can lead you among them there. But from this bank you'll see each face in movement better than if you were down there with them. Highest rank, and therefore highest seat, goes to that one who has the look of letting duty lapse. See how his lips are still, while there are none but him who do not sing. And he, perhaps, Rudolf the Emperor. He might have healed the wounds that have slain Italy. Too late for someone else to save her. Her fate's sealed. That other one who seems to comfort him rules where the waters spring that the Moldau brings to the Elbe, fills it to the brim, and the Elbe takes them to the sea. Where now reigns Wenceslas, there once reigned Ottokar, his father, who in swaddling bands was worth more than his bearded wanton son by far. And he whose nose is of small height and girth, so cheek by jowl with him of the fair face, the first is Philip, third king of that name, who led the fleur-de-lis to great disgrace, and died of shame and heartbreak, a sad fame to have. No wonder here he beats his breast. And see the other one, who lays his cheek upon his hands and sighs more than the rest, Henry the Fat, king of Navarre. We seek in those two the twin fathers of the pest of France, Philip the Fourth, hard to forgive. He sent the papacy to Avignon. The foul and vicious way he chose to live, they both know, and the grief is never gone, but like a lance it pierces them. And he, so strong and handsome, wore a belt of strands, one each for all the virtues, proud to be Peter of Aragon. Beside him stands Charles of Anjou, that long-nosed one, you see. A vicious streak, but still the first great Guelph. And if the youth who sits behind him had reigned longer after than the man himself, his virtue, all the good and nothing bad, might well have passed from one cup to the next. But Peter died before his father. Nor were all those other heirs of his less vexed. James, who had ruled in Sicily before he did in Aragon, and Frederick, who took Sicily, each has his realm, but not a better heritage. Those times are few that human worth hangs on to what it's got while rising through the branches. This holds true, because who gives it wills, it must be sought from him. I speak of that one with the nose not less than Peter. To them both that thought applies. Apulia is in the throes of pain, so is Proenza. There was need, from Charles to Charles, of a maintained process. The plant was so much stronger than the seed. The second to the first was that much less in force than Peter to the second. See Henry of England sitting there alone, who ruled his life with pure simplicity. He fathered one who did well on his own, Edward, that brave boy. He that sits most low among them on the ground, and with raised eyes, is Marquis William Longsword, whom we know lived in a cage, held as a human prize by Alessandria, and died, and so let loose the war, and Monferrato weeps, and Canavese. War that never sleeps. Canto 8. Now was the hour that longing turns around for sailors, towards what they left behind. The hour that melts their hearts when, outward bound for just one day, the last light brings to mind that they have said goodbye to dearest friends. The hour that pierces the new pilgrim deep with love, if he should hear what the bell sends from far away, the sound of chimes that weep in mourning for the dying day. It ends in sadness, and I started not to hear Sordello, as a soul had caught my eye, who'd risen and made signs to catch my ear. He lifted his joined palms, stared at the sky eastward, and seemed to say, "Nothing I care for anything but that." A Latin phrase, "Telucis ante," floated on the air, the prayer at nightfall. Such sweet interplay of notes came from his lips, and so devout that I was taken from myself, and then they all joined in and sang the hymn throughout, sweetly and piously, and once again they eyed the starry wheels of the divine. Now look with sharpened eye towards what's true, reader, for surely here the veil's so fine that going in is scarcely hard to do. I saw that noble host, without a sign or word, pallid and humbled, look on high as if in expectation, and I saw appear above and come down from the sky two angels, and the flaming swords they bore were broken short without points. Garments green as leaves born just a breath ago they wore, trailing behind them. These clothes could be seen to fluctuate, made airy by their wings. One stopped and took his stand a little bit above us, and the other varied things by landing on the far bank, thus to fit the company between them. Their blonde hair was plain to see. Their faces, though, left me bedazzled, since no faculty can bear excess. "Both angels are the progeny of Mary's bosom," said Sordello. "They keep watch here on the valley, for the snakes will shortly come." Not knowing quite which way to turn, I turned around, chilled with the shakes, and sought the trusty shoulder. "Now let's go," Sordello said. "Down there into the dell, and hear what those shades have to say. I know to see you walk alive will please them well." Only 3 paces downward, I believe, brought me below, and I saw one who stared at me as if, albeit looks deceive, he might have known me. Now the light so fared that the air already darkened, yet night's gain was not our loss. What was shut off before between his eyes and mine was now made plain. We stepped towards each other then, and more delighted I could not have been. What pain, noble Judge Nino, had you, being dead, been guilty too? But you were here. Between us two were no fine greetings left unsaid, and then he asked, "And how long has it been since you sailed on the distant seas that led to this high mountain road?" "The way I came," I said, "was through the sad realm, and it was this morning from the first life. All the same, I hope to gain the second life, because this leads to that." Judge Nino, having heard these thoughts, drew, like Sordello, a step back, as men bewildered by a sudden word who strive to find the clarity they lack. One turned to Virgil, and the other turned to someone seated there, and, "Conrad, rise!" he cried. "Come see what we have learned God's grace has willed. Stand up and feast your eyes!" "To me, then, by those special thanks you owe to him who keeps the purpose of his will so secret, no one can completely know its nature. There's a task you should fulfill. When you return across the wide waves, show Giovanna, my dead daughter, where to plead my case, for heed is paid to innocence in heaven. Her poor mother now indeed no longer brings, I fear, to my defense much love for me. She gave up the white veil of widowhood, which she must now regret in misery. She shows us it must fail, the force of love, and women will forget in time, unless the flames by sight and touch are kept alert. The viper of Milan, which leads their troops afield, won't do as much to make so fair a tomb as I began to do with my device, which was the proud cock of Galura. Were we man to man, as one Visconti to another, bowed would that one be, and she would love me yet. He spoke like that, and as he did, his face with that invariable will was set, which burns first in the heart and earns its place through piety. Meanwhile, my greedy glance kept going to the sky just where the wheel of stars slows, as spokes near the axle dance a stately measure. Virgil. Son, why steal so many looks up there? I seized the chance to have my question answered. What are those 3 torches I see flaming at the pole? And he. These 3 shine here at the day's close, where those 4 shone this morning. But their role is different. Supernatural virtues these betoken, while the others on the whole stand for the best of earthly qualities. While Virgil spoke, Sordello reached for him and held him, saying, Look, our enemy! Pointing a path into the air grown dim. And where the dell had no wall, we could see a snake, such as perhaps gave Eve the food, the bitter fruit, Through flowers and grass it slid, the vile streak, and it had the attitude, turning its head as often as it did and licking its own back, of some smug beast that preens itself. I don't see just how, so can't say here, though I can hint at least. The holy falcon set out, but they now both plainly flew across the lesser light. The serpent heard their green wings cleave the air, and turned and fled back to its nest the night. The angels then regained their posts, a pair of hunting birds abreast. Meanwhile the shade close to the judge, since he was called, did not one single moment shift his gaze. It stayed on me. So may it prove that you have got in your free will enough wax for the fuel the lantern needs to light you to the peak, the enameled summit, he began. The rule is, if you bring the news with you, then speak to me of Valdimagra, or the land nearby, for there I once was very great, I, Conrad Malaspina. Understand, not the old Conrad who built our estate beside the sea, but nephew to him, and that loving care I lavished on my kin is here refined to proper love of God. I never came to where your lands begin, I said. The earth you owned I never trod. But who in Europe knows not the renown of you and yours? Your honored family name exalts your lords and holdings with a crown. Those who were never there revere your fame. But now you're here. And I can swear to you, as one who hopes indeed to go above, your honored line, whatever it might do, will never throw away the praise and love brought by its liberal purse and skillful sword. Nature and practice will take turns to bring such privilege when they're in close accord. The guilty head in Rome can't change a thing. Although he turned the world awry, your line goes straight alone and scorns the evil path. And he, true, true, that very thought is mine, and 7 years will bring an aftermath. Scarcely so often will the sun return to rest in that bed, which the ram bestrides with all of its 4 feet, before you learn such kind opinions can be nailed inside your brain by sharper nails than men can talk, driven by power far beyond men's pride. Unless God wishes can be held in balk, you will be there to see a sweet release from agony. My family will make peace. Canto 9. In Italy the dawn, once mistress of worn-out Tithonus, whitened with its light the window of the east, and from her love drew free. The gems on her sweet brow were bright, set in the form of that cold little beast, the scorpion that stings men with its tail. And here the night, in step with that increased illumination, set out on its trail into the dark. 2 climbing steps it made, and almost on the 3rd had closed its wings, so it was 9 at night. In me had stayed something of Adam's human weight that brings the need for sleep. Exhausted, I stretched out where 5 of us were seated on the grass, and there I dreamed. And that dream was about the hour near morning when the swallows passed their time in plaintive song, the memory, perhaps, of Philomela's ancient woe. And when our minds, from mortal weight set free, and mortal thought in that state seemed to know the future like the past, so what we see looks like a vision of the not yet so. I seemed to see an eagle gliding high and poised, with feathers gold and open wings, to plummet in a moment from the sky. And I was at the place that Ovid sings, my Virgil sang it too, where Ganymede, lost to his hunting friends, was taken up by Jove, who took an eagle's shape and speed, and rode the clouds with all the gods to sup and sit in council. For myself, I thought, perhaps it strikes here only, and disdains to use its mighty claws for the transport of anyone from elsewhere. For my pains I was rewarded when I saw the bird first wheel a while before it fell my way, as frightful as the lightning. In a word, upon the instant I became its prey. And up I went, to meet the fire between earth and the moon, and there, it seemed, we burned together. And the flames that I had seen only in sleep so scorched me that they turned me out of bed, awake as I had been before I slept. just as Achilles sprang awake after his mother, as he slept, transferred him, and all of this Statius sang, from Chiron's care to Scyros while she kept him in her arms, until from there the Greeks won him away, so I was startled too. Sleep fled, and I felt in my ice-cold cheeks the color fade, which it is bound to do in any face that feels fear. There alone beside me was my comfort, and the sun, already 2 hours high, was on its own beyond its star companions. Night was done. My gaze turned to the sea. "Now have no fear," my leader said. "Take heart, for it bodes well for us. Renew your strength, for you are near to purgatory, and there is how you tell. That rampart rings it in. So now we're here. And there's the entrance, where the mound looks split. Not long ago, at dawn before the day, when your soul, on the flowers by which is lit the place below, still slept, there came your way a lady who said, 'I am Lucy. Let me take this man that sleeps, so I can speed him on his road.' Sordello lingered yet, with all the noble souls, and her first deed was taking you, and when the daylight shone, she took you up. I followed, till she put you down here, but her eyes first fixed upon this opened entrance. Then she turned her foot, and she and sleep together were soon gone. As those in doubt when reassured may find, through truth, that fear is turned to confidence, so I was changed. My guide saw how my mind was free from care, my face no longer tense. He climbed the mound. I tagged along behind, towards the summit. Reader, you see how I rise to a high theme. Don't wonder, then, if I should elevate my manner now, with stronger rhymes and figures from my pen, as intricate as fancy may allow. We drew near, and came to a point from which, where first I thought I saw only a gap as if a dam were broken by a ditch, I saw a gate, and that gate was the cap for 3 steps leading up to it, each rich with color, and a porter who said naught as yet, and as I stared at him intent, where he sat on the topmost step, I caught the full force of his face, the way it sent more light to me than I could bear the thought of feeling further on my eyes. A sword was naked in his hand, fit to reflect the rays on us so I could not afford one long look, but was driven to collect the merest glimpses of its untoward brilliance. "From where you are, say what you seek, and on whose warrant. See that your long climb be not to your harm. Name your sponsor, speak, or do I look as if I'm made of time?" "A woman from the sky who is astute in all these things," my master answered, "said to us just now, 'You must be resolute. Go that way, it's the gate, just go ahead.' And may she guide your footsteps on the route to good," the courteous warder added. "So come forward to our stairs." And we approached. The first step was white marble, with the glow of clarity, and smooth, no blur encroached. I saw it in the face that best I know. The second, darkest purple, burnt and rough. A stone split lengthways and across. The third, that weighed down from the top, looked near enough to porphyry, yet flamed and swam and stirred like red blood spurting from a vein. On this God's angel rested both his feet, then sat upon the threshold, which analysis by eye alone said must have been a flat, wide slice of adamant without a flaw. Up these 3 steps. Step 1 meant the first stage of penitence, contrition. By that law, step 2 betokened the next shining page, confession. And step 3, a true remorse, the end point of regret's hard pilgrimage. My leader drew me with the holy force of his goodwill. "Now bid him that the bolt should be withdrawn, which is his given task, but do it humbly." Those feet without fault I threw myself in front of, there to ask devoutly that he open up, but first I smote my breast 3 times. Then 7 P's he traced across my brow with that sunburst he called a sword while I was on my knees. "You're in," he said. "Try not to think the worst. These wounds wash off. Cold ash, or earth dug dry, would match his raiment, out of which he drew two keys, one gold, one silver, to apply, first one the white and then the yellow, to the door so I could be content. When one of these keys fails to open up the lock, he told us both, the vital thing's not done. The passage stays shut solid as a rock. One cost more, but the other one demands more skill and wisdom if it is to move the lock's wards, for it's he who understands who solves the knot. Mere doctrine may not prove sufficient. They were Peter's, and he bade me air through opening, not keeping closed, so long as longing souls continue glad to throw themselves the way that they're supposed to do at my feet. Then he pushed the door of the hallowed gateway open. Enter! But you have to look, he said, always before. Look back, and you will find the door swung shut with you outside again. Each single hinge belonging to that heaving, booming mass of metal door creaked fit to bring a cringe of shame to Rome's great rock that cried, Alas, the Tarpeian! That treasure house roared less, nor showed itself more stubborn when the good Metellus lost it by the ruthlessness of Caesar. And its groaning gate withstood a legion, then gave way to the excess of force, and then that strong box was laid bare. But this held treasure of a different kind. Te Deum, the sweet notes hung in the air. Te Deum laudamus, they touched my mind. Those voices, and perhaps they started there. I heard the same thing that we sometimes find when human song and organ sound are joined, and now the words are blurred, and now new coined. Canto 10. When we were in the threshold of the gate, so rarely used because of misused love, the fault that makes the crooked way look straight, I heard it boom shut. Would I be excused, I thought, if I should turn my eyes to it? We climbed through a rock's cleft, which turned one way, and then the other in a manner fit for waves that flood and flee but never stay. Here it would suit to use a little art and alternate the side we fasten to, since each moves close before it draws apart. So said my guide about what we should do. It made our steps so small. The waning moon was back in bed and sinking into sleep before we left the needle's eye. But soon, upon that, in the open, where the steep mountain draws back, we found our freedom. I was weary, and we both lacked certainty as to the way. We stopped, to get the lie of the land, on a place that looked to be as flat and lonely as a desert track edged by the void, walled by the mountain's face. In width, it was a man laid on his back three times across. When I searched into space, as far as my keen eye could make its flight, the terrace seemed to me to be the same. Now on the left hand and now on the right, no variation worthy of the name. Our feet had not yet moved when I perceived the curving wall, impossible to climb, was made of a white marble unrelieved except by carvings calling up the time of Polycletus. Though they would have shamed nature as well as him. The angel who came down to tell mankind, which had been blamed for Adam, that there would be peace anew and heaven open now, had not been named as Gabriel, but you could tell that there he was, and carved so truly for his grace of attitude he seemed to speak. One's ear heard Ave, as he praised the lifted face of her who turned the key to love supreme, and in her bearing were the words, Behold, the handmaid of the Lord, and did not seem to be but were clear as a stamp may mold a seal in wax. Let not your eye grow fond of these alone. He had me on that side of him that keeps the heart. I looked beyond the news for Mary, and then took a stride past Virgil, and drew near to make the bond by eye with what was there. Carved in the same white marble wall, the cart and oxen drew the sacred ark. Sad Oza won his fame by touching it, and men learned not to do what God had not said. But there was no name, not his, nor anyone's. There was no need for that. Before the ark appeared a crowd of 7 choirs. 2 senses disagreed. "They're silent," said one, and "they sing aloud," the other said, prevailing. Similarly, the nose and eye disputed at the smoke of incense, for its lavish pungency was there and not there, and I smelt it soak the air yet couldn't see it. And now he, the humble psalmist, more and less than king, before the blessed vessel, danced his dance, swathed merely in a cloth. To hear them sing, and watch the monarch pirouette and prance, Michael, Saul's daughter, and the king's first wife, was figured at a window straight above, and clearly she was sad about her life, and scornful at his show of higher love. Past her I moved, to where another tale gleamed white. The glorious deed of that great prince of Rome, whose gift for justice without fail moved Gregory to intercede, and since that day he has a place in paradise and not in limbo. Trajan. And a poor widow was at his bridal, and the price she paid in grief was seen there to be sore, her posture and her tears. The place around the emperor was trampled by a throng of knights, and once again I heard the sound. The eagles on the gold flags all along the grand procession felt the wind and flew. Among all this the widow seemed to say, "Avenge me, Lord, for my dead son, for who but you can ease my grief?" And he, "Today, when I return." And she, "My Lord, when you return?" Her grief was urgent. "You might not." And he, "Then he who takes my place will do what you request." And she, "What have you got of goodness if another does the good that you forget?" And he, at last, "You're right. Take comfort, for I must do what I should before I go. Compassion for your plight asks me to stay, and justice orders me." Nothing was ever novel in his sight, and yet he said these wise things visibly. I mean that you could see the sound, and that was new to us, because unknown on earth. While I took such delight in gazing at these images of such exceeding worth, in this depiction of humilities, distinguishing the great, and in the skill shown by the craftsmen of that sacred frieze, my poet said, "Forget about the hill for now, and look on this side. See them walk towards us, many of them, but with slow steps. They will tell us, if we make them talk, the best way to the next stairs. They must know." My eyes, content by now with rich new things, were quick to turn to him. "But, reader, don't imagine I would have you fold your wings and fall from good resolve so that you won't know how God wants you to repay your debt.